are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
What is it the children want to know? Not what are you going to dump on them. What do they want to know? And Matthew actually interviewed his student parliament, and they all said what they wanted when they came back to school was for teachers to be able to explain to them what's coronavirus, what's a pandemic, why is it killing people, etc.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Professor Barry Carpenter, CBE, who has had a career in education spanning 40 years. Once the youngest head teacher in England at just 26 years old, he's the UK's first professor of mental health in education. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the challenges head teachers are facing in the first term back after summer, the recovery curriculum, and the trauma of lockdown for children.
Hello everyone, this is Ross. You're listening to Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am delighted to be joined again, one of the few people to be on the podcast for a second time, Professor Barry Carpenter, CBE, who has a career in education spanning 40 years. And Barry, as we know, was one of the youngest head teachers in the country and is now the UK's first professor of mental health in education. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Ross. Really good to see you again.
How are you coping with lockdown?
Incredibly busy, really. I seem to have just gone to a life of webinars. My wife will often say to me, where have you been today? And I said, well, I started in Scotland, went to South Gloucestershire and ended in Haringey. It's been an interesting time. Obviously, with teachers being at home during lockdown, they actually had time for some tremendous CPD.
Yes, it is.
And so there was a lot going on. I think the scenario is changing now with the demands of being back.
Yeah, I mean, I probably did about 60 webinars in kind of April, May, to about 5,000 teachers in 60 countries, actually. But now, as we know, the vast majority of school teachers are in school full time with their kids. Yes. We'll talk about that shortly. But talking just before we came on online, the vast majority of teachers in terms of social media presence is dramatically reduced because their time, energies and efforts are pretty much trying to keep our schools open and safe. I want to talk to you about head teachers. I know your son's a head teacher.
Yeah, Matthew, yeah.
What are your perceptions of the challenges that head teachers are facing? And just for context and people listening, we're recording this in October 2020. What are your thoughts with head teachers today?
I think this term already has been hugely challenging for head teachers. They're the ones ultimately responsible for the safety and safety procedures in schools, and they, in my experience, they have been utterly meticulous in implementing those. What I feel sad about is that the government did not provide a robust testing system to support our schools as they returned. I think we all just assumed it would be there, mm-hmm. and it's not. And you've mentioned my son. Two of his children had to be tested one weekend, which meant then for the next 3 days, he was out of school as head teacher. His wife was out of school as an A-level teacher. My granddaughter was out of school at year six and was worried then about missing her SATs work. And the younger children were at home. I'm thinking that we're not even in winter yet, and schools are already very fragmented in their practice. It must be impossible to get any curriculum cohesion and coherence.
Yeah, I think the last bit of data I checked, almost a million kids are not in school in some shape or form at the moment, and that's just absolutely 6 weeks into term. You know, those children
have chosen not to return, Ross. Internationally, it's in the millions, the number of 14, 15-year-olds who've not returned to school systems across the world.
Mm-hmm. And also the spike in home education has also gone up as well. I mean, it's very interesting times. My son here, so we've just relocated from London to Yorkshire, as I've said to you before we came online, and my son's one form entry, they got their first COVID case 2 or 3 days ago. So, you know, even a small little village school, you know, this virus, as we know, it can impact on anybody. What would be your recommendations? And of course, we need more testing and tracing systems, but if you can offer some advice to people, I know you work very closely with government, but in terms of any recommendations to help with testing and tracing or to help with head teachers coping with difficult circumstances?
I think head teachers and staff teams need to build in to the structure of a week space where they can actually be. There's not enough. I met a teacher the other day who said how lonely she was in school. She went there in the morning, took her lunch, took her drinks with her, stayed in her area of the school, never spoke to another teacher really during the day, only spoke to children. Mm-hmm. That's not a natural state. I think we're all hypervigilant, children and teachers. And hypervigilance is not a resting state for the brain. The cortisol is really rampaging when we're hypervigilant. We're all hypervigilant out in the community. Just think, anybody listening to this, just think of your own experience of going to the supermarket. You're obeying the rules, you're wearing your mask, you're following the one-way system, but still there are people ducking and diving in front of you. Absolutely. And so you're skimming and scanning the environment all the time. You're hypervigilant.
It's exhausting, yes.
It's exhausting, and I think there needs to be time built in a week that, I know you can't bring huge groups of people together, but small groups where it's just tea and cake, just chance to talk. There just needs to be these debriefings because people are carrying so much emotionally. I think it's really challenging the well-being.
Your son's a head teacher in a secondary in Northamptonshire, I believe.
In Worcestershire.
Worcestershire. What kind of strategies or insights has he been giving you in terms of how he's managing collectively the staff's anxiety and the unknown, so to speak?
Yeah. Matthew has a lovely phrase, he calls it nimble leadership.
Right.
Because he's got a diagram of it where it's him zooming from one place to another. Fortunately, he's quite young and he can zoom quite well. He's actually built in that talk time for teachers. And, you know, within the senior leadership team, made sure that the SLT have designated teachers that they're responsible for going and checking on the well-being. Lots of opportunities within the staff team to, if they can't talk face-to-face, to talk virtually to each other, to just try and keep this sense of community, making sure that people, too, have time to just do things like walk, make sure they go out and walk during the day when it is their break time, to get out there.
It is interesting. I've seen quite a few people, especially online, just say just 10 minutes, pop outside, just go for a little walk. And it sounds silly, but actually when you do it, I've been going on the smallest dog walks ever because I haven't got into a new routine where I've just moved to. So I'm trying to find a new established dog walk. But just 10 minutes makes a big difference.
Yeah.
In terms of recovery. Now, that keyword recovery curriculum I want to talk about.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts and recommendations here?
Okay. Matthew and I, back in April, published the recovery curriculum, and it's gone absolutely viral. I mean, 250,000 hits on YouTube and 7,000 hits a day on the recovery curriculum website. And what we tried to look at there, for me particularly, it was about the loss that children were experiencing when we went into lockdown, the loss of routine, the loss of structure, the loss of friendships has been significant on children of any age. And then that loss of opportunity, just think what happened to our GCSE and A-level students, and then the loss of freedom. Mm-hmm. When I interviewed some Year 5 children last term, very socially distant, just a small group of them for a particular project, and one little lad had a slip of the tongue and talked about being locked in. And I thought, actually, mate, you've got the definition there of lockdown. For children, they feel like they've been locked in. Many children are angry. Being locked in, locked down, is not a natural state in childhood. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in the behaviours that children are manifesting now they're returning. There is that undercurrent of anger. There is that undercurrent of worry. And I think the first starting point for any head teacher is to rebuild relationships. You know, you've heard me say before, Ross, teaching is a relationship-based profession. They can never take that away from us. Mm-hmm. But we've got to rebuild our school communities. On that day when we told our children that we were going into lockdown, for younger children or those with special needs, they actually felt that they were being abandoned. Mm-hmm. Why is this teacher that I really like you, why are you putting me out? And the Boris argument didn't work. Right. And so those children have come back to a different teacher. So they've never healed and repaired the relationship with their former teacher, and probably into a different classroom, which is not the happy, jolly environment that they left before. It's got hatch tape. It's got areas you can go in, can't go in. There's no books around, etc. So I think for everybody in a school environment, there's this undercurrent of worry and concern and anxiety. And all of that leads to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't deal with that trauma, it has lifelong.
So I'll come towards your work with the NHS and trauma in a moment. In terms of the people that haven't seen the recovery curriculum kind of webinar, one, could you just signpost that for people? Could you give us the highlights of what your conversation recommendations are?
Yeah, so where to go to is www.recoverycurriculum.org.uk. And then the highlight would be, okay, how are we going to respond to all of that? And what we've devised is what we call five levers. We're talking about levering children back into school. At this point in time, I don't think we're fully into recovery. We're into rejoining and reconnecting in our school communities, getting those relationships right. So the first lever is about relationships. The second one about community, which I've just touched on, and particularly noting the relationship there with parents and families. Mm-hmm. Because for 6 months, they've had the responsibility for educating their children. Some parents will not want to relinquish that easily. So mm-hmm. we need to be respectful and accept they'll want updates. It's the third lever is about a transparent curriculum. What is it the children want to know? Not what are you going to dump on them? What do they want to know? And Matthew actually interviewed his student parliament, and they all said what they wanted when they came back to school was for teachers to be able to explain to them what's coronavirus, what's a pandemic, why is it killing people, etc. Children have every right to ask that question. And I say to every teacher, have you taught the lesson on what COVID-19 is? Children need explanations because the regular news bulletins do not give them that
in
language they can interpret. There's that whole thing about metacognition and learning to learn is a fourth lever. Basically, let's just check out children have got the learning processes in place, because learning at home, and again, I applaud what parents have done. I applaud the resilience of children going through that home learning process. But it is different to the social dynamics of our regular classrooms, even in this time with the restrictions in schools. So we need to check out the learning processes before we start. I really resent the catch-up brigade, because they're going to put pressure on children who are frail, fragile and fragmented in their learning. And we will crush them.
Mm-hmm.
And we must not do that. And the final one is about space.
And your thoughts on exams and assessment for 2021?
I think that there needs to be a clear policy soon so we can reassure the children about how they're going to be assessed, whether that is modification to the syllabus, whether it's a combination of coursework and exam work. Nobody can say what the exam period next year is going to be like. Is the pandemic still going to be around? Mm-hmm. Will there be a vaccine? If coursework needs to be a component, let's get the rigour in there so it's been properly prepared, not hastily put together, had to be of necessity this year.
Yeah, I mean, if we think of year 11s, you know, they've missed 6 months of school already, and some are already not in school again. So, you know, in terms of level playing field, it's going to be very interesting. Now, let me move over to kind of trauma, NHS, your work in mental health, and referencing our first podcast, we did a lot of discussion on vulnerable kids, particularly premature children, and as we know, we've both got our experiences with that. Your insights with your work, you know, you've been reappointed to the DfE as an advisor, and you're working with NHS. Give everyone some headline information they need to know.
So the DfE became interested in recovery curriculum, and we had some good conversations. And where that fitted most within their workload was, as people know, DfE brought forward the launch of the relationship sex health education curriculum. A really good piece of work led by Nikki Chowdhury at the DfE, who's really sincere and committed to this area. So I supported some of that work actually did the launch for them at the DfE, and we had about 6,000 people on that webinar. Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of sustainability, when people are saying, well, this term, okay, we'll do some recovery curriculum work, get the children back on board. And it's good that Amanda Spielman has said about rebuilding school communities that there are no inspections. And she herself has said we need to start where every child is at. And and schools need to say that back to Ofsted inspectors.
Yes.
They think they're coming in too heavy-handed. But we with the work with DfE, I was then asked to liaise with the mental health team at DfE. I've held expert advisor roles at the DfE before. And I did that, and we did some joint work with NHS. And there are various trends starting to emerge. So, for example, there is a big spike in eating disorders and self-harm, particularly in year four, in 5-6 girls. So a younger profile, and you with a secondary background, Ross, would know that is a feature in secondary schools. But, you know, we're seeing it more and more in primary, and it's accelerated. My own daughter is an OT working in child mental health and has been removed from her normal duties into working in eating disorders. The spike is so large.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, NHS too, in their observations and their natural monitoring, resonated with what we've said in the recovery curriculum, that it's about children will be experiencing bereavement because they may have lost a grandparent, but they lost their friendship group and will have gone through some sort of mourning. The trauma is the biggest factor that's a worry, because children have heard a lot and seen a lot that's gone unprocessed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's teachers' jobs this term to have lessons and recovery conversations,
mm-hmm.
where they explore those issues with children. So it's put to rest,
mm-hmm.
because if they carry unprocessed trauma, it will impact on their lifelong opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And our legislative goal as teachers, 1988 Education Act, is preparation for adulthood.
Now, you've published a couple of books to help with trauma.
Yeah.
Could you just explain, the journey of the books and what they are and how they can help teachers and young people?
Sure. Well, I've had a long association with national charity Books Beyond Words. I was their vice chair till recently, and an organisation established and still headed up by Baroness Sheila Hollins, who's a psychiatrist by background. And I was commissioned by Baroness Hollins to write two children's books, which are a new experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've written two books, Lenny and Lily in Lockdown and Lenny and Lily Return to School. So they're books of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
10 years' time, hopefully they'll have no use at all. And I collaborated with an artist, Charlotte Furman, and had two primary colleagues who helped with the trialling and development of this work, Alison Skinner and Jenny Hawkes. And these books are now free and downloadable from the Books Beyond Words website.
Mm-hmm.
And they are wordless books. And before anybody tells me they've got very high reading standards in their schools, they are deliberately wordless. This is not about literacy. This is about emotional literacy.
Well, I've always been a fan of non-verbal literacy. So tell us more about what we'd see inside the book.
So you will see, you know, Lily and Lenny before lockdown, happily playing together because they live next door, attend the same school. And then the impact of lockdown, how they couldn't have the social interaction. There's a lovely picture of the grandparents delivering Lily's birthday present, putting it on the doorstep and having to step back. And
yes.
And that was, for me, that was a lived experience with two of my grandchildren.
Yeah.
And having to have her birthday party on Zoom with a birthday cake and her parents, but all her friends and family are on the Zoom link. And what I very much hope is that as children tell the story of Lenny and Lily, in fact, they'll embellish it with their own experience. They'll recall their own experience.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the whole pedagogical process here is about the co-creation, co-construction, co-production of mm-hmm. story. And that in itself will help the children ameliorate some of their trauma and contextualize the feelings and emotions that might be rampaging and displaced in them at the moment.
So these were published in June, is that from memory?
No, they're actually launched for the start of this term. No,
they've okay. And they've had a lot of downloads already, and they are free, just to reiterate.
They are free. Hard copies can be obtained from the charity you have to
purchase. Can you plug that website, Barry, for us?
The website for Books Beyond Words is www.booksbeyondwords.co.uk.
Okay. Now I'm going to give you. I'm going to throw some quick fire questions at you, Barry. If you remember, 6 months ago, I put you on the spot with some random questions. So I'll see if I can catch you out. I'm going to totally make these off the top of my head, and plus some of the things that we've discussed. What would be your piece of advice to a head teacher today?
Make sure you've got time for yourself, even if it's only at a weekend. Make sure that a weekend you come down, because you're up and hypervigilant all the time. You're going to exhaust yourself, and you need to look after yourself, because if you break, then the impact on your school will be huge.
If you had £80 billion to spend on education, what would you do?
What would I do? I would make sure there's a right testing system to support all our children, keep them properly safe. But I think I'd go about transforming some of our school buildings, because we've discovered the woeful inadequate state of some of the buildings, trying to section them off and make it in down 1950s corridors, trying to get two lines of children passing safely is an impossibility.
Impossible. What's the most important thing you've learned in your life to date?
Kindness.
Okay.
Yeah, kindness.
What's your best tip for teachers to reduce the marking burden?
To reduce the marking burden. I think at this point it's time to collaborate with the children on that marking, because whose learning is it anyway? And I think they need the ownership back, that they are confident learners. They need some self-efficacy, some belief in themselves as confident learners.
What's the best compliment you've ever received?
You don't look your age.
Very good. Tips for parents with premature children.
Get the Lenny and Lily books, because children who are born prematurely, as you will know, tend to be naturally more anxious and don't always process emotion so well. So I think the Books Beyond Words resources are useful to have. I've actually been talking to a couple of parents of prematurely born children, and they found the pamphlets that Books Beyond Words have produced completely free on beating the virus and going for a test. Absolutely excellent, because who knows when a child is going to be called for a test? Mm-hmm. And they've heard about testing. It could sound fairly scary. So seeing it in a picture form that creates a story, you've just reduced the anxiety before the situation occurs.
Absolutely. Thank you. What are your top tips or things you've learned from your webinar experiences?
That your conventional humour doesn't work and it falls flat on its face.
Excellent. What's your highlight of lockdown? Positive one?
Being able to grow vegetables.
Okay. When things do return to normal, where's your next holiday going to be?
Crete.
Okay. And book you're currently reading?
Book I'm currently reading is Harlan Coben, The Boy in the Woods. Just superb. I've read everything he's ever written.
Okay. Thank you. And two questions I always ask. Who would you recommend that I interview next and why?
I think probably recommended before Dame Philippa Russell to you. And that's it, because Dame Philippa is actually on one of the government advisory groups looking at COVID, but particularly from the point of view of carers. And obviously, you know, for you and I, we know families where children with disabilities are having to have lots of care, and that carers have been abandoned. And I can speak firsthand from that. My wife has medical conditions and is in a wheelchair, and normally we would be serviced by up to 9 people in the course of a month. That's and everybody funny. Went. It was just me.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear. My final question, Barry, I've asked you this before, so let's see if your answer is the same as the last podcast. What would you hope to be your legacy?
My children.
Okay. Barry, it's been great to catch up with you 6 months since we last spoke on the first podcast. Keep up the amazing work. For people listening, Beyond Words, those two free books to download, and that Recovery Curriculum YouTube video to watch. Barry, thank you for your time, and keep up the amazing work. It's been great to chat with you again.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.